Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. I'm Brett King.
And I'm Jason Henricks. Every week since 2013, we explore the personalities, startups, innovators, and industry players driving disruption in financial services.
From incumbents to unicorns, and from cutting-edge technology to the people using it to help create a more innovative, inclusive, and healthy financial future. I'm JP Nichols, and this is Breaking Banks.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. Back on the show is semi-regular supporter Brian Solis. Brian, welcome.
Hey, it is always awesome to be here. Any time spent with you, I feel all the better for it.
So, Brian, I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to ask you to sort of, as well as giving us some content on the novel economy and the new normal, I'm going to ask you to do some sort of co-hosting duties with us this morning as well, or today as well.
I didn't study for this one.
No, it's okay. Just go with the flow, man.
I'll go with the flow.
Now, you've just recently made a move. Tell us about where you landed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I recently joined Salesforce. It's a big move for me as their global innovation evangelist. And before that, I was an industry analyst, an author and speaker, and joining Salesforce is really one of those hashtag dream jobs. It's a company I've followed and studied for many years, and the team that I've joined is actually a group of super smart people. It's essentially an in-house think tank. And our job is to think about the future in a variety of contexts and explore it not in a commercial lens, which is really fantastic. And the novel economy, which we'll talk about, is one of the lenses that I'm looking at the present and the future in right now.
But you were already an evangelist. Now you've just got some like corporate support behind you, right?
I have a heavier business card, so to speak. Yes, I've been a digital anthropologist, and then also using the study of digital's impact on humanity, also looked at, you could call it a futurist, you know, scenario planning around if people are changing in this regard, how would that play out in this context, And most of those cases were customer experience, corporate innovation or business innovation, market opportunities. None of it included a global pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess no one really can sort of plan for this in the way we expected to sort of have time to plan for it. Although, having said that, you know, we had been warned by the WHO and Bill Gates and many others that this pandemic was coming. So all those sort of plans went out the window a little bit when we were faced with what is known as COVID-19. But it will come out of it. So we will get to that. What does the new normal look like? And what's a novel economy? How's the economy going to change? I've got some thoughts on how capitalism needs to be reformed around this because, you know, within 21 days of the first case in the United States being recorded, you know, you started to see massive economic effects in the US. And of course, now we have 40 million unemployed. You know, that's likely to increase. There's a lot of fallout. We'll definitely get into that. But let me invite a good friend of mine on the show, Ivan Glazachev. Is that how I say it, Ivan?
Yes, that's right, Brett.
Very good. And Ivan is the CEO of Yandex Money. For those of you not familiar with Yandex Money, you know, we often call it the PayPal of Russia, but that's sort of a little too simplistic. But Ivan, tell me about, because Yandex as a group spawned Yandex Money, but tell me a bit about what Yandex does in Russia, broadly.
Yandex is a company that's the number one search engine in Russia, but it's also a group of companies that does taxi business. There is the Yandex Taxi, and a couple of years ago, there was the big collaboration with Uber, so Yandex Taxi bought Uber business in Russia. There is also the food tech business, there is the health tech business, ed tech business, all kinds of businesses under the overall Yandex brand. And the Yandex Money is the fintech business. Yandex, although it's not only Yandex, but Yandex Money, it's PV. There are two shareholders, Sberbank, the biggest Sberbank, the biggest bank in Russia. It has 75% of the company, and Yandex has 25% stake in the company. And basically, we're the both were the new bank, so under the brand Yandex Money. We don't have the full banking license, but we have what can be referred to as EMI license, for instance, in Europe.
Yeah.
So we're licensed to do all kinds of transactions, money transfers, payments, top-ups, etc., etc., etc. We issue cards, we issue virtual cards, physical cards, so we're the principal member of MasterCard and Visa. And so that's what we do under the new bank, Yandex Money brand. And we're also a PSP, we're the biggest payment service provider for the internet payments in Russia under the brand Yandex Checkout. So basically, we're the aggregator of all well, traditional payment schemes like Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and alternative payment methods. We aggregate more than 20 payment methods on our checkout, including, for instance, such payment methods as direct debit or WeChat Pay in Russia.
Now, so it sounds like you guys were one of the first super apps, you know? So you've got, now we have WhatsApp, WeChat in China, Gojek in Indonesia, the emergence of these sort of super apps. But you guys were doing these sort of collective different types of businesses for a while, with Yandex Money being that sort of central thread that ran through that because it had enabled the digital transactions on mobile, right?
Well, we're not only focusing on the Yandex ecosystem as our, you know, just as our own only focus. So we work on the broad market overall across Russia, across CIS. So, and well, I mean, pretty big in terms of merchants. So there is like 120,000 merchants that we service as a payment platform. And well, so that's not only Yandex, that's also various marketplaces that operate in Russia, both international and Russian, gaming companies, health companies, merchants, et cetera, et cetera.
So can you give us a bit of an indication of sort of the size of your merchant partnerships or your, you know, your transaction volume that you're doing through Yandex Money these days?
Our share in terms of merchant count is close to 37%. So one-third, well, every third merchant is serviced by us. And in terms of volume, we're smaller because mostly we're focused on the small to medium-sized businesses. But we have close to 12, 13% market share in terms of
volume. Sorry, can you repeat that? What percent market share?
12% market share.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. Yeah. So have you guys seen a big increase in online participation since coronavirus has impacted Russia?
Well, there are some interesting trends that are going on in Russia. First of all, I have to say that, well, it all started in the end of March. That was when the President Putin declared that, well, from now on, there is like, first of all, it was announced as 1 week holiday. That was the last working week of March. And then the whole April was announced as a holiday season. So everybody stay, all the businesses stay closed. Everybody had to stay at home. Then it extended till May, till the end of May. And only now, since June 1st, the trade centers are opening, well, with certain restrictions, obviously, but still are opening. Like offline merchant can start to function, etc., etc. So there was like 2 months shutdown in the country. And what we've seen is that during the first week, basically, well, all sales, obviously offline sales, but well, we monitor online sales specifically, were down. So first week, it was first 2 weeks, probably the online volume went down 25 to 30% overall across all industries. But then, although offline sales, they still could not recover, and there is official statistic that, for instance, just gross retail in Russia in April is down by 23%, which is a huge number. But online sales, they went up to like 20-25%. That's overall what we see. And that happened in the second part of April. So the recovery started in the second part of April and went all the way through May. So basically offline going into online, I guess that's a common trend in many countries. But that was just interesting how various industries split, like some marketplaces almost doubled in their size, Russia-based marketplaces, but some international marketplaces with the decline in volume. Obviously, travel industry had the probably the biggest hit with like 80-90% volume decline. But gaming, express food delivery, various ad tech businesses, they're, you know, like doing pretty well in terms of, at least in terms of volumes.
Now, Brian, I know, you know, that there's some real structural changes going on here. A lot of people think maybe that, you know, once the lockdowns and the shutdowns are lifted, we sort of go back to normal. But, you know, we have airlines that have gone bankrupt over this. AMC is announcing they're probably going to go bankrupt. This is the largest network of cinemas in the world. You have major retailers like JCPenney going into receivership or Chapter 11. So we're talking about some real structural changes here. You know, you've got in Russia, in the US, in on the African continent, you know, in Asia, mobile commerce is booming. You know, I've seen one like Ding Dong Maicai in China, an online grocery delivery company. You know, their revenue was up, you know, 500% in Q1 in China. You have, you know, Zoom obviously announcing their results today with huge gains, going from 10 million users to 300 million users during this. So let me ask you this question, Brian. You know, do you think the changes in behavior we've seen through coronavirus are going to stick and become more of a defining element of how the economy recovers?
I think that's the question on everybody's minds. There's certainly a great deal of conversation of the new normal. But if you psychologically sort of peel back those layers, the new normal, I think people sort of think that it's going to look a lot like the old normal. It's because the context in which we work every single day, or I should say the construct, is designed for yesterday. And we're trying to adapt yesterday's constructs for all of this, essentially just trying to stabilize. But here's where the answer to your question comes to light. We could look at any data before March. We could almost just throw it out the window and really start around the world looking at how the world started to change country by country, and more importantly, how those behaviors started to change. Because as we saw, mobile is booming. Mobile is skyrocketing in terms of how people are communicating, how people are shopping, how people are staying informed and connected. You know, of course, digital behind that in terms of traditional digital, if there's such a thing. But what's really important, though, is to understand the psychology behind the virus, and that is the world literally shut down, and it shut down almost long enough to sow new behaviors. And with those behaviors, there are attached emotions, there's fear, there's anxiety, you have essentially a somatic marker, an emotional bookmark in the lives of everyone around the world that are forever going to hold on to this moment. It says, science says that it takes about on average 66 days to forge new behaviors that become automatic, right? Or second nature. So are we there? I don't know. But I'll tell you this, once people start to explore the joys, the conveniences, and the personalization of a digital first experience in whatever that world is, that is going to become, you know, the famous or the infamous new normal. But here's the other thing that we're not really talking about. That virus is still here, and that virus is going to be here for the next 12 to 24 months. And if a universal treatment comes along and a vaccine comes along, it's still going to take time for people to sort of respond to that in a way where we're just running around the way we used to. So this new normal is going to be very different, and we have to start designing for that.
Yeah, because you've got obviously a shift of where investment's going, a shift of where people are working in respect to getting access to services and things like that. We've got some pretty significant changes here. And as you say, 66 days to form new habits. Well, most countries are, we're in, I guess, day 80 or something of the shut-in here in New York. So I don't think, we will pop down to the grocery store and get some groceries. But the biggest problem we've had is being able to get a slot for online delivery of our groceries. But for everything else, we were pretty dependent on online already. But I think, it's the fact that all these new people are coming in using these online services where they haven't before. So, Ivan, have you seen growth here happen as a result of new users on Yandex Money's platform? Or have you seen customers that previously didn't do a lot of activity doing more? This growth you're talking about, where does that come from? Has it come from just growth in the existing customer base or new customers using Yandex Money for the first time?
It's both. So what's happening is really is that the people are starting to use the platform maybe not as frequent, because we see that the average number of transactions in certain areas declines, but the average check goes down. And that's specifically, I think, it's correct for online shopping, like groceries, like buying certain foods, et cetera, but overall, we see that at least like 71% of our customers, they shop at least once online. That's during the year. So during the pandemic shutdown, this has increased to over like 85%. However, also, what I think there was a very good quote by Bill Gates, if I'm not mistaken. He said that the people overestimate short-term trends underestimate long-term trends. So, obviously, these times would form new behavior patterns. That there is no question about that. It's, I think, the question, which of the patterns that are, red hot now, like, for instance, we see, there is huge increase in streaming services. In Russia, there is a forecast that express food delivery would grow by 30 times this year. So, and the question is whether these trends would really stay with us. Whether it's just, would go up and then when we return to normal in whatever 12 months, 18 months, or whatever, whether this would stay with us, like how are we going to travel, how are we going to consume food, or how we're going to be entertained. I think that's a pretty interesting questions that would undermine the core of our business and the split between our business. I mentioned earlier that we bought the new bank, like the consumer bank, for people doing transactions with the PSP platform. So during this period, we see that the transactions of our customers, new bank, they go down, as I said, by the number of transactions, but the volume through our PSP checkout has increased dramatically. So whether this will stay the same or whether it will return to their normal kind of balance, that's an open question for me.
Yeah. Now you have obviously this partnership with Sberbank. For big wallet players around the world, this sort of tight relationship with a bank is actually fairly unusual. PayPal obviously has some relationships with banks, but not huge in investors. Tencent and Alipay, maybe have investors that are banks, but they don't have the type of strategic relationship that you have. Sberbank is, by some accounts, one of the largest, if not the largest, bank in Europe today, certainly in Russia and the CIS states. So why did you guys choose this alliance with Sberbank, and what has that done for you operationally?
Well, I guess we didn't choose that. That was the Sberbank choice.
Right, but, okay. Yeah.
In terms of operations, there is, I think, a very good partnership between us. First of all, yes, Sberbank is the biggest bank in Russia, and almost in most industries, it has 60-plus percent market share. However, there are still lots of, I would say, underserved customers, underserved merchants that we work with. For instance, for us, for our PSP platform, a VIP merchant would be a merchant with the volume in excess of 5 million rubles per month. That's that's volume less than $100,000. So for Sberbank, that's not VIP. So on our platform, this merchant gets personal treatment and personal manager and, lots of care and attention, but that's somebody who is not noticed by big banks as Sberbank. The same for our clients, normal people, for clients of our new bank. So we work with lower margins, obviously, but that makes us probably more agile, and we hunt for those people who are not focused on maybe traditional bank products, but more inclined in terms of convenience, in terms of personalized service, some personalized experiences, bonuses, discounts. Since our platform both has merchants and buyers, we can combine them together so to form various, as I said, discounts and special offers. So yeah. I think that there is the good. So we have our own niche, but we also use the infrastructure of Sberbank for some of our purposes. For instance, you can top up our wallet via any Sberbank ATM or via Sberbank online. Sberbank is one of our partners for acquiring. So the merchant.
So it gives you depth in terms of both like merchants, but also, cashing in, cashing out, and those various transactional elements, right?
Yeah.
Good. So, hey, Brian, I want to get, before we go to the break, I do want to get into your thoughts on the novel economy. So this new normal in terms of, how we move beyond, what was before and how we morph into these new changes. Obviously, I've got an opinion that there's elements of the capitalist market that sort of failed us here, namely, access to ICU beds and the fact that, within just a few weeks of the shutdown of the economy, so many people are unemployed around the world. But tell us about, how you see this novel economy developing.
Wow. In that lead up, Brett, we could talk about that for hours.
Exactly.
It's a big failure on multiple levels. But listen, the new economy is it's inevitable, right? It's happening now, and it's in its darkest days as we speak. When we talk about the new normal or what that new normal looks like, I am both as someone who studies digital behaviors and behaviors in general, and also the future. I wanted to give a name to this new normal, but I also wanted to be an optimist about it as well, because I think that these are unprecedented times, to use a cliche, but that doesn't necessarily mean that how we move forward has to be by yesterday's playbook. There is no playbook for these times. We have an opportunity to pave a way forward, to create a construct that's going to understand how people are changing right now, how their relationship with money is changing, how their value system is changing, how they define success, how they live, how they shop, what is important to them when they spend their money. All of these things are being defined and started to be defined in March. And so we have to pay attention to what I call the novel economy, which means that meter started running in March. There's already data for us to start looking at, but we have to think about it in terms of phases, right? So phase one is the survive mode that I think every business went into, which was, how do I stabilize where I am? how do we ensure business continuity? And we saw a lot of that play out in terms of remote working, definitely e-commerce. But the next phase in the novel economy is alive, right? So we have to start living. We have to start building what this new normal is going to look like. But we also have to start thinking about yesterday's normal was part of the problem. So we right. have a chance,
right? It precipitated this economic.
Exactly. Shock. Exactly. And so now, as we start to build this new future, we don't just think about business continuity. We don't just think about yesterday's business models and yesterday's standards for success and yesterday's metrics that sort of quantified that. We now have an opportunity to create the future we want to see. So Alive starts putting us towards the steps or stepping us forward towards phase three, which is Thrive, which is what does innovation look like in any disruptive era in our history. Some of the greatest inventions, some of the greatest innovations have come forward. There's nothing to say that we can't be part of that.
No, indeed. And I think the onus is on us to really focus on, you know, carving that out, particularly the connectedness. You know, we've all been in this together. And, you know, that the social cause, the social consciousness of, you know, the economy moving forward, you know, the market economy, capitalism in the past, it really doesn't take into account big social causes like dealing with a coronavirus pandemic or dealing with technology based on employment or, you know, dealing with climate change and the impact that that's going to have. So we do need to start thinking more about, you know, how the economy should serve humanity in general rather than just the markets. But that's as you say, something we could discuss for many, many hours.
I'd like to put an underscore and an exclamation point there that this is really about humanity. Life as we know exactly. It has changed. And the more that we put the human being at the center of all of this, the greater the innovation, because then it has purpose and it has meaning.
And the greater the chance our species will thrive, as you say.
That's yeah. right. This is not the last pandemic. This is not the last disruption. As you said, Mother Nature is also starting to show what's possible here in the future.
Absolutely. So, Ivan, thanks for joining us on the show and giving us an update on Yandex Money. Where can people find out about Yandex Money, and are you looking for offshore partners at the moment?
Yes, sure. We work with any partner that wants to enter Russian market, provided services for goods to Russians. So we're happy to discuss business, to connect to Russian payment methods, to Russian alternative payment methods, or to provide our wallet facilities. So our website is money.yandex.ru, and you can find all the information there.
Excellent. Спасибо, друг. Is that how I say it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Спасибо.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Brian, you know, if you've got to go, we appreciate that too. Thanks for hanging around, and you know, we will get you back on very soon to talk more about your evangelism stuff.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on, and be well and safe.
No problem. All right, guys, you're listening to Breaking Banks. We're just going to have a quick break now. We'll be right back after the break with some high performance computing discussion.
You know, now that so many of us are staying home and working more from home, a lot of businesses have found themselves suddenly in the e-commerce business, and they're finding it's tough to keep up with the new standards of what we're calling delivery culture. But now you can with ShipStation. No matter where you're selling, if it's through your own website or through something like Amazon or Etsy, ShipStation brings all of your orders into one simple interface. You can even manage it all right on your phone. ShipStation works with all the major carriers, including FedEx, UPS, the U.S. Postal Service, even Amazon Fulfillment, so you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customers. They even offer big discounts on shipping costs, so now your business can access the same discounts that the big players get, and you'll always know you're getting the best deal. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice for online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. And right now, Breaking Banks listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use offer code FinTech. Make sure your business is ready to meet the demands of delivery culture. Get started at ShipStation.com today. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and just type in FinTech. That's ShipStation.com, and then enter the code FinTech. ShipStation.com. Make ship happen.
We're grateful at Breaking Banks to introduce Masterclass as a new sponsor for the show. Masterclass lets you learn from the best with exclusive access to online classes taught by masters of their craft. For example, you can hear from Chris Voss on The Art of Negotiation, Bobby Brown on Makeup and Beauty, Neil deGrasse Tyson on Scientific Thinking and Communication. Over 75 different instructors across a ton of categories. There's something for everybody. For me, you guys know I'm a super science tech nerd. And so, of course, what am I going to check out? I'm going to check out astronaut training from Chris Hadfield, his master class on that. How to become an astronaut, how to become, what the astronaut training is like, from leadership skills to survival skills. A phenomenal class and really some incredible insights. Check it out. I highly recommend you checking out Masterclass. Get unlimited access to every single Masterclass in their library. And as a Breaking Banks listener, we'll give you 15% off the annual all-class pass. Go to masterclass.com/banks. That's masterclass.com/banks for 15% off a range of incredible Masterclasses from masterclass.com.
Establishing trust remotely is a key concern for any business undergoing a digital transformation. Jumio uses AI to automate online identity verification so you can quickly determine if your online users are really who they claim to be. With face-based biometrics and certified liveness detection, Jumio is as easy for your users as taking a selfie and strong enough to deter and detect fraud. Learn more at Jumio.com, J-U-M-I-O.com. Loved by users, loathed by fraudsters.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
And now, here's more Breaking Banks.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. We are very pleased at this time to be joined from some friends all the way from Bangkok in Thailand. We're going to be speaking to Bi and Jun shortly about the Thai fintech scene and specifically about a deal recently between Siam Commercial Bank and their 10X incubation initiative and Sinca, a Thailand-based fintech company who's just completed their Series C round at $80 million, which included investments from SCB 10X, the Sparks Group, Toyota Financial Services, Sumitomo Mitsui Banking Corporation, and Aioi Nisei Dawa Insurance as investors. So we will talk more about Sinca and so forth, but first of all, let me introduce you to Bi. That is Ms. Pitipon Panapat. And she's the Chief Business Development and Financial Officer for SCB 10X. And Mr. Jun Hasegawa, who's the Group CEO of Sinca. I hope I pronounced that relatively okay, guys.
That's right.
Yes, quite.
So, Bi, tell me, how is, first of all, let's get to the important things. What is Thailand like during coronavirus now? Because I know that you've probably been watching the US. It's a real mess still here in the United States. But how are things in Thailand?
Oh, hello, Brett. Thanks for the show. But in Thailand, it's actually getting better. And we have gone through almost 1.5 months of lockdown period. So everything was closed and then everyone's supposed to stay home. And in fact, a lot of us are still working from home today. And that's the 90% of Siam Commercial Bank employees as well. And so already no more cases in Thailand domestically. And a lot of the new cases come from those who we transport back from other country. So the Thai citizens.
Mostly imported. And do you still have the quarantine for people coming to visit?
Not anymore. So you're welcome to come.
I will be there first week of September. That's my plan right now. So.
Yeah, so it's very good, and I think people are quite handling it well. So a lot of us are still, most of us are still wearing masks, but we can now go to restaurants, shopping, and no more curfew. And well, I think the ritual of washing hands and then social distancing is still mostly there in an adapted way.
Well, I look forward to visiting ICON CM when I get back. So, did they open the movie theaters yet?
Not quite. But in fact, some the movie industry tried to adapt. So they used the, what is it called, the car.
Oh, like the drive-in movie.
The drive-in type of theater. Going to
yeah, we've had that in the US too. So drive-in movies in Thailand, that's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. So I think a lot of industries trying to adapt. So that's one of them. But food delivery and a lot of the home delivery becomes very popular during the COVID period, during the quarantine.
So first of all, let me ask you a bit of a sort of fundamental question for listeners who, you know, are listening from around the world today. What is Thailand like now during the coronavirus crisis? Because in the US, I'm sure you've been seeing the news, we're still very much in the midst of it. But how is Thailand surviving with this?
Yeah. In fact, Thailand is doing very well. So if you remember at the beginning of COVID, Thailand is one of the very first countries that got the infected cases. However, I think we implemented the lockdown quite early, and it's almost 2 months of lockdown, and now we already came out. It's already 1 month after the lockdown, and people are still wearing masks, social distancing, and wash their hands regularly. But and now the new cases are very low, mostly from the patients or passengers who come from abroad. No domestic new cases. But a lot of the new habits or some of the learnings still there, such as work from home. I think Siam Commercial Bank, particularly, is still 90% of the employees are still working from home. And then the habits of order out and then food delivery or even some of the e-commerce did very, very well during the COVID period.
And you can go back into shopping malls and restaurants now?
Yes, all the restaurants are open and people are very keen to go back to restaurants. But then the tables will be set up differently.
With so social distancing, yes.
Social distancing, yes. And for the malls as well. So the government did quite well on implementing the app so that everyone who goes in and out of the mall has to check in through the QR code. So that's...
Oh, good. So that's the contact tracing they include in accessing the app. I mean, accessing the mall. Yeah.
Yes.
Very good. That's smart. Given that the mall life, you know, particularly in Bangkok, is such a big part of people's lives, it's very cool.
Yeah, so happy to be able to go back to the mall. You should come.
I know. Well, I'll be there first week of September, hopefully. Maybe I'll ask you this question. Tell me a little bit more about the fintech scene generally in Thailand, because it started a little later than, say, the US or the UK, but there's a really thriving community there now. Can you give us a little bit of perspective?
Yeah, I think, you know, in the Southeast Asia, it's a little bit like different beast, even in Thailand. Because all the infrastructure is really fragmented and isolated. So, but you know, I watch your YouTube too. But you said about the starting from scratch at one thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Or
first principles.
Or it's an enhancement, right?
Right.
So, in case that you can do the starting from scratch approach, and then the one of the successful case is. The Thailand is the first country implement unified QR code, a payment system called PromptPay. And I was really amazed. You know, I came from Japan and then I thought I knew most of like efficient payment, the process. But you know, it's I send the money, but it's just a type in the phone number and anytime and free, which is a really amazing. You know?
So real time, frictionless, free, compared with the ACH system we have in the United States, which takes 5 days and costs you money.
Yeah.
And that's electronic payments. This is not paper checks, which anyway,
Don't even get me started on this. Obviously, China and Thailand, Singapore, Hong Kong are, you know, well ahead of the US when it comes to real-time payments, which a lot of Americans, I think, would be shocked to hear. But to see the QR codes implemented there successfully is key.
In fact, if I may add on that, I think it's quite effective during the COVID, because even the bank notes are things people are afraid to hold cash. Right, so on this, I think QR code or even the digital app that the bank has, the mobile banking, I think we have seen significant increase in both the new customers and also the transaction. So a lot of the customer segment that in the past, it's quite difficult to get them on board, especially the sort of the up above 60 years old segments. I think now they, during the COVID, they self-onboard into the mobile banking, which is very good.
So older people are using electronic or digital banking, mobile banking for the first time since COVID there, yeah?
Yeah, and including the number of transactions, because most of the branches are closed during the COVID.
I understand. Let's talk a little bit more about SCB and Synca. So first of all, CM Commercial Bank, you have this 10X and this sort of moonshot mission, which, you know, we're familiar of from Google, but these are your moonshot mission in a similar way to Google, things that investments that can create exponential growth. But tell me a little bit more about CM Commercial Bank Group's focus on venture capital and investments over the past few years.
Sure, Brett. I would maybe start a little bit on the CM Commercial Bank from probably 3 years ago when it started on the transformational journey. So including all the IT investments and then developing the SCB EC, which is the mobile banking. And so it went through different iteration phases. And then within that mobile app, people can transfer, pay, or even do the installment of credit cards, everything through the mobile banking. And then it tries to add some of the lifestyle aspect into the mobile banking so that it becomes a super app in everyone's phone and becomes an everyday app for the Thai people. But then I think on that, it's still seen as trying to digitize the bank process and using mobile banking as a channel rather than being a real platform or business. And then at the same time, it's still working within the captive market, which is the bank customers and bank product, and more like a captive market. And so last year, so it started with a project of 10X, and which becomes an entity now, which is the SCB 10X, with the mission that it would invest and create and partner with tech-related companies to build a business that would become the 10X. But then I think the method would be different, because I think we have our own lab, which started different platform in a lean way. And then we have our VC funds. And then I think that the VC fund has always been there since 3 years ago.
Right, so now, is it still called Digital Ventures, the VC fund?
No, actually the name is different now, because Digital Venture, throughout the 3 years, it has developed its own product and would like to pursue that as a business. So Digital Venture has the B2P, which is the blockchain supply chain financing using blockchain. So Digital Venture become a business that would eventually raise fund. And it's actually doing very well and will be raised fund very soon. Yeah, so it has good traction. And so Digital Venture become one of the portfolio companies of SCB 10X.
You know, we have seen a handful of banks create their own venture arms and create, you know, sort of investment arms and incubation facilities. But there's not many in Thailand that have done what SCB has done, is there, in terms of the banks creating venture funds and, you know, incubators?
Right. I think, yes, I'm not sure if the way we did it is the optimal one. So we are still learning it and try and error. So far, we have developed three portfolio companies, like a virtual, venture building through the venture building track. So Digital Venture is one. And then we have another two digital lending business called Monix and Uppercuts. So these three becomes portfolio companies that we would have to help them to raise external funding in the future. The venture cap, which is, I think it has its own track and then doing quite clearly, and then it's a corporate venture cap. So that one, I think the size is becoming bigger and bigger.
Yes.
And the part is the strategic investment. So we, similar to what we are talking today with Zynga, so we see this as a strategic investment. So that's why we put it in a bigger ticket size and also more substantial ownership stake, because we see that with SCB10X, with SCB together with Zynga, we can create a lot more, both on the traditional side of the bank and also with the blockchain related part.
So you guys are big blockchain fans. You talk about decentralized finance a lot, I know. But I want to just hone in on one area. You've identified five areas that you invest in: digital payments, digital lifestyle, health tech, which includes telemedicine, of course, AI and robotics. But the one area that I'm very interested in terms of what you've been doing recently, is remote working. So tell me more about how you're investing in the remote working space, because it's very important since COVID.
Yes, actually, it's a new area. And I think it comes from the COVID period, where we see there's more and more. So far, a lot of them are still in the pipeline. But so it's there's two parts. One is the working space, the gig economy, and also the cyber security. So I think we don't have the names for you on which the companies' names that we invested on. But these are one of the five spaces that we are looking at carefully because of the COVID. That's in addition to the health, because during the COVID, the telemedicine, the health area becomes getting more traction, and the new use cases has come out. So I think those are the two new areas that got expedited because of COVID.
Now, health tech is going to be very big coming out of COVID for sure. So Junsan, if we can get into the sort of backstory, first of all, about Zynga. You're Thai-based, but you just said before you spent time in Japan. There's obviously a thriving fintech community in Japan. We've done some work with the Japanese Fintech Association and others before. But tell me about how Zynga came into being and what problem you were trying to solve.
Yeah, so the one of the things that I learned, the Zynga, the Omise Group, is my fifth the startup. So I've done the four before. The first one in the US and Japan at the same time. I learned a lot from my failure. Then the one of the things that I actually is eager to try is building something that very significant for the people's daily lives. So infrastructure business. And then my co-founder, he's a Thai Kiwi. So he used to live in Japan, and he went back to the Thailand back in 2011. And in 2013, he called me up, like, why don't we just start something in this leapfrog market, right? And I decided to move to Thailand back in 2013 and thought of starting the e-commerce platform, but we couldn't find any good payment platform, which was the pain point. We found it out, and then we spoke with the whole like startup community. Everyone has the same problems, and then we started this payment, the fintech, the startups called like Omise Payment, and then we set it up like holding company back in 2015. That was a Zynga, and then now we are holding. We subsidizing two main infrastructure company, which is traditional payment, Omise Payment, trusted acceptance technology company. And the other one is called OMG Network, which is the blockchain-based technology, value transfer network. So we tried
to... So what does the OMG stand for?
It's before it's called Omise Go, but, we just take it
as... You just shortened it.
Yeah.
So are you guys a payment gateway business? Are you a, back-end bill payment system, an e-commerce payments rail, something like Stripe? Or, how would you categorize your business?
Yeah, some people saying that, like, we're the Asia, the version of Stripe.
Asian Stripe.
Yeah, so...
They should be called Tiger or something then, right?
Oh yeah, tiger or elephant or something.
Exactly. No, but so, that's good. Just go ahead.
One of the things, it's OMG network. It's also built it from the pain point. When we build it, Omise Payment, a payment processing the gateway services. When we try to connect it, back in 2015, all the infrastructure, right? Existing infrastructure is the main flame of the banks, the card schemes. Hyper painful because it's fragmented and isolated. So the omnichannel payment is built mean to unify connectivity. You know, when people's connecting to us, they can connect into any like the payment channel. So that's one thing, right? But the since we found out this is a core infrastructure problem, we thought, why don't we just build one ourselves? And then we are looking to blockchain technology. And then that becomes the OMG network.
So, you know, it's good to see blockchain being implemented in a real way in Thailand. Still a lot of the blockchain stuff we've seen hasn't got to implementation stage for many organizations. So that's a big thing. Now, I know, you guys have obviously, you've been big believers in blockchain. You've got a number of investments. 3 years ago, you invested in Ripple, I remember. You're amongst the top five financial institutions in terms of volume on the Ripple network, and you connect to over 12 countries globally. So I see where this fits in. But tell me about the process of you guys coming together, SCB and Synca.
SCB, 10X and Synca. So I think we started talking, well, I think first of all, we use Synca as our payment gateway partner since last year or even 2 years ago. And then some of the relationship get even deeper and deeper, and the business units are happy working with Synca. So I think with the aspiration of what Synca wants to do around the blockchain and also how it adds into the capability of the bank and also with the 10X on using blockchain. So we see that there's a strategic fit, and then with the fundraising, so we think it's a good timing to tighten up our relationship. And I think we probably cannot say much in terms of some of the work that are still working together and soon to be announced. But then I think we think that Synca can also help, also together with Synca, we can work together to create some of the pieces within the blockchain banking, especially around the payment, because we think that around the programmable money that allows payment to be embedded in the business transactions. Not necessarily have to be just the fiat currency, but then some of the digital assets, including the loyalty, I think there's a lot more that can be done. And then I think that's worked well with a lot of our retail customers at the bank today, which have pain point that they have a lot of loyalties that they want to use, and it's not real time. It's like, it cannot be done across the country when they travel to Japan, for example. And I think we hope that some of the work that we are doing within the BU, such as connecting to different partners, corporate partners, to build e-wallets or loyalty, I think some of that can be topped up and make a lot more through this collaboration. On top of what you mentioned earlier on the Ripple investment and transactions, so now from the bank or even our mobile banking, you can transfer money through the mobile across the country, remittance across country through our mobile banking, and it's almost real time with very minimal fee. So I think this is, for us, it's something that's much better for customer in terms of cheaper, faster, and what is the other one? Better, yes.
Cheaper, faster, and better. That's the magic combination. Right. So when we look at, we're hearing a lot at the moment about Ant Technology and their upcoming IPO potentially. But part of what they've tried to do is create a wallet infrastructure. And we've seen Alipay, and we've seen other plays like Kakao in South Korea and Gcash. And they've sort of become an aggregator for many of these consumer payments. But, you know, when you talk about a lot of what you're doing, you know, you're talking about payments between Thailand and Japan. But to expand that outside of Thailand, are you guys thinking about sort of acting as a gateway for Thai businesses to go offshore with payments? Do you see yourself becoming part of some blockchain payment network in the future? How do you think it might progress beyond the Thai geography?
It's definitely the latter, but then I think we need to use Thailand as the first use case, and then hopefully we can do it in the integrated way. So payment using blockchain is the only one piece out of this whole jigsaw. So I think there's a lot more on the digital bank concept. Either it's the exchange or the stable coin or the tokenization. So I think we see that. I think It depends on the philosophy that if you're looking for one partner who has the whole stack and then you build a whole bank that already fully integrated, or you start from bit and pieces. And I think for us, I think retail or payment like this, I think it's one piece, but also there's a lot more pieces that we have to develop.
And also
for different purposes, right? So payment is one, but investment is another piece that we have to make well. Yeah.
And I understand Thailand is investigating CBDC, a central bank digital currency also.
Yeah, yes. So I think that's the part that you mentioned about digital venture earlier. So digital venture right now is doing the supply chain financing using blockchain and already gained traction with a lot of the big companies, conglomerates in Thailand, like the SCG, the Siam Cement, or the Miner, and many more. So I think that digital venture is becoming a business on its own and will be expanding to other countries within the region. Not even the region, global, because we even tap South America or some of the countries in Europe as well. And then we'll be going through the external fundraising. But at the same time, digital venture is helping central bank on this CBDC project.
Understand. So, Jun, tell me a bit more about your team. That you have, how many people you've got working for you these days, how big is the team, and you know, more importantly, what does this Series C that you guys closed in June, what does that enable you guys to do now that you couldn't do before?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a gas for the startups, right? So we do a little stuff, I think. But for our case now, among the group, we have the close to 270 like families, and we are spread over the place. We are a remote company, you know, we are based in Thailand, but majority is a foreigner. We have 36 nationalities, so we have quite a diversified ourselves. And this 3C is help us to build something connected a business more. Because before, we are really building the core technology, right? Infrastructure layer. Let's say the blockchain. You know, if we asking somebody, can you connect it to the blockchain? I don't think none of people understand how to connect in the blockchain. Because at the end of the day, the people doesn't care whether we're using the blockchain or not. It's a usability is everything. You know, what kind of a user experience we are providing to the people. So we'd like to the building something easy connect, as like connector to the core infrastructures. Like service layer is more important right now, because before it's just a pure protocol, right? So no one understand. That's something we want to invest. At the same time, we have a great partner like SCB right now. Before, regulation is one of the barrier for us. But now with SCB, we can break this boundary and we can get a trust, we can get a large customer base through the SCB partnership. So what we can do and what we can invest is the technology and the speed and the resource. So those are areas we want to invest and then become the global the financial infrastructures. And then you actually made a very, very good questions, like how we will become, it's kind of the cross-border wallet framework. Because a wallet is going to be, it's people's real wallet is going for it, right? It's because of work from home. People need to access to the financial infrastructure through their mobile phone. So I think at least if people stay on the same network and the service the layer, it doesn't matter. We can build whatever the people need and then localized what they want. So those are the things I really want to, and now we are working on with the SCB.
Right. So you have the two business units. You have OMG Network and you have Omise or Omise. What is it? How do you pronounce that?
It came from like
Omise. 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 Japanese. Yes. Yeah. But you've got largely a Thai team, I see, over there. Ezra, Don, Harinsut, Anuchit, Chiteprom. So, you know, you've got quite a good Thai team. So where can we find out more about Sinca and what you guys are doing right now?
It's Sinca is holding a lot of like different infrastructures to businesses. And then going forward, I think we extended ourselves more. But as people can go into like our website and check.
And that's Sinca.co, right?
Sinca.co, yes.
Yeah. Okay, very good. And B, how can we find out more about SCB10X?
It's through the website and also Facebook, scb10x.com.
Yeah, Thai is one of the biggest users of Facebook for business globally. Indonesia's big as well, but Thailand does a lot of business on Facebook. It's sort of interchangeable with the internet for many Thais, which a lot of people don't realize.
The marketplace actually are doing very well during the COVID as well, because people can start selling little things from the brownies to even houses.
All right, brownies. Are they special brownies?
Yeah.
Because, you know, marijuana is illegal now. It's legal now in Thailand for medical purposes, right? No, I'm just joking. All right. Well, listen, guys, thank you very much for coming on Breaking Banks today. We really appreciate your participation, and really interesting to hear a little bit more about the Thai fintech scene. June, all the best with the investment. Good luck with the continued growth. And B, I look forward to seeing your team, the SCB team, when I get back to Bangkok in the latter part of the year.
Thank you. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you, Brett.
Thank you, guys. This is Breaking Banks, another show in the can for this week. We will obviously have more for you next week. You've been listening to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. See you next week.
That's it for this week. If you like the show, make sure to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform, or share it with a friend, or share it on social media.
You can listen to all of our more than 300 episodes, plus all of the other shows from Provoke.fm Media, and learn more about being a guest, a partner, or a sponsor, all at Provoke.fm.
We'll see you again next week with more Breaking Banks.